second time she'd done so in as many minutes, Anna observed.
I like a bit of gossip, said Wells. Anyway, you know that I'm looking at making an investment. How am I supposed to keep up with the stocks without the paper?
Yes, well, it's done now, and it won't hurt you to wait until tomorrow. Have you had enough toast, Anna?
Anna frowned slightly. Mrs. Wells had asked her this already.
Yes, ma'am.
Good, said Mrs. Wells. She was tapping her foot.
What fun we shall have tonight. I love to look forward to a party. And naval men are so high-spirited and terribly good storytellers. Their stories are never dull.
Wells was sulking. You know I spend my mornings with the paper. I do it every day.
You can catch up on the Leader, said Mrs. Wells. Or last week's Littleton Times. It's on my writing desk.
Why didn't you burn that, then?
Oh, I don't know, Crosby, snapped Mrs. Wells. I'm sure it won't do you any harm to occupy yourself in some other way. Read a settler's pamphlet. I have a store of them on the bureau downstairs.
Wells drained his coffee and set his cup down with a clatter.
I need the key to the safe, he announced.
It seemed to Anna that Mrs. Wells stiffened slightly. She did not look at her husband, but concentrated on buttering her toast. After a moment, she said,
Why is that?
What do you mean, why? I want to look at my dust.
We had agreed to wait until a more prudent time to sell, said Mrs. Wells.
I'm not selling anything. I just want to take stock of my affairs, that's all. Go through my papers.
I'd hardly call them papers, said Mrs. Wells, laughing slightly.
What else?
Oh, you make it sound so grand, that's all.
My miner's right. That's a paper.
What need could you possibly have for your miner's right?
He was scowling.
What is this? A royal inquisition?
Of course not.
It's what they are, said Wells. Papers. And there's a letter in there I'd like to read over.
Oh, come, said Mrs. Wells. You must have read that thing 1,000 times, Crosby. Even I know its every phrasing by heart. Dear boy, you do not know me.
Wells brought his fist down on the table, causing all of the crockery to jump.
Shut your mouth, he said.
Crosby,
said Mrs. Wells in shock.
There's sport and then there's sporting, said Wells. You just crossed over.
For a moment, it seemed as though Mrs. Wells were about to make a retort, but she thought better of it. She dabbed her mouth with a napkin, regaining composure.
Forgive me, she said.
Forgiveness doesn't cut it. I want the key.
She tried to laugh again.
Really, Crosby, today's not the day. Not with the naval party this evening and so much to organize. Let us put it off until tomorrow. We can sit down together, you and me.
I'm not putting it off until tomorrow, said Wells. Give me the key.
She rose from the table.
I'm afraid you've heard my final word on the matter, she said. Excuse me.
Excuse me? I'm afraid you haven't heard mine, said Wells.
He pushed his chair back from the table and rose also.
Where is it? On your necklace?
She edged around the table away from him.
In actual fact, it is in a safe box at the bank, she said. I don't keep a copy at home. If you wait, just a...
Rot, said Wells. It's on your necklace.
She took another step away from him, seeming for the first time alarmed.
Please, Crosby, don't cause a scene.
He advanced upon her.
Give it.
She tried to smile, but her mouth trembled.
Crosby, she said again, be reasonable. We have...
Give it to me.
You are causing a scene.
I'll cause a bigger scene than this. Give it up.
She tried to make for the door, but he was too fast. His hand shot out and grabbed her. She twisted her body away, and for a moment they struggled, and then Wells, scrabbling with one hand at her bodice, found what he was looking for. A thin silver chain, from which a fat silver key was dangling. He wrenched it out, gathering the key in his fist, and tried to snap the chain. It tore at her neck and would not break. She cried out. He tried again, more sharply. She was beating his chest with her fists. Grunting, he fought to restrain her, still with the chain wrapped round his fist. He tore at her neck again.
Crosby!
She gasped.
Crosby!
At last it broke, and the key was in his hand. She gave a sob. At once, he turned, panting slightly, and went to the safe. He fitted the key into the lock, rattling the handle several times before the mechanism clicked, and then the heavy door swung open. The safe was empty.
"Where's my money?" said Crosby Wells.
Mrs. Wells swayed, her hands cupped around her neck. Her eyes were filled with tears.
"If you calm down just a moment," she said, "I can explain."
"Who needs calming?" said Wells. "I asked a simple question, that's all. Where's my bonanza?"
"Now, Crosby, listen," said Mrs. Wells. "I can get it back. The bonanza. I only put it away for a while. Somewhere safe. I can get it back for you, but not until tomorrow, all right? Tonight there are a great many distinguished gentlemen coming to the house, and I haven't the time to go to where I've hidden it. There's just too much to do."
"Where are my papers?" said Wells. "My miner's right, my birth certificate, the letter from my father."
"They're with the bonanza."
"Are they now? And where is that?"
"I can't tell you."
"Why not, Mrs. Wells?"
"It's complicated," she said.
"I would imagine it is."
"I can get them back for you."
"Can you?"
"Tomorrow, after the party."
"Why not today? Why not this morning?"
"You can stop hectoring me," she said, flaring up. "I simply can't manage it today. You'll have to wait until tomorrow."
"You're asking for time," said Wells. "I wonder why."
"Crosby, the party," she said.
Wells looked at her for a long moment. Then he crossed the room and pulled sharply upon the bell rope. The maid Lucy appeared within moments.
"Lucy," said Wells. "Go down out to George Street and pick me up a copy of today's Otago Witness. Mrs. Wells appears to have burned our copy by mistake."
Gold, in which Francis Carver receives a message and Staines is left alone. The fit of whimsical good humour that had prompted Emery Staines, on his arrival in Dunedin, to commission a natal chart from Mrs. Lydia Wells, medium, spiritist, had been only intensified by the forecast itself, which, being uniformly providential, had put him in such high spirits that he felt inclined to celebrate. He had awoken the next morning with a terrible headache and a guilty sensation of indebtedness. Upon applying to the hotelier, he discovered to his alarm that he was in debt to the house to the tune of £8, having put up a fortnight's stipend on a game of brag, only to lose every penny of it, and £5 more. The circumstances under which he had become so grossly indebted were somewhat hazy in his memory,